Today, how to be a middleman.
Welcome to Coffee with Creamer, where you get to sit down with our host, Dr. Barry Creamer, for a conversation about faith, life, and culture. We'll look at old ideas through a new lens, turn those culture wars on their head, and paint a picture of the way things could be. If you like your thinking deep and your coffee hot, pull up a chair. You're in the right place.
Okay, really, that's not quite the right term, but it is the right idea. And it is rooted in something we've talked about before in previous episodes. I love narrative structure, love talking about narrative structures. But one of the narrative structures I don't go to very often are just the elements of narratives, particularly the narratives of plays, like tragedies and things like that, as Aristotle saw them, which included plot and character and meaning and diction and sounds and visuals. There are different words that are used for that. But it's all the elements that make a drama and make it worth studying and, you know, what's this like in it and so on. And the one I'm always focused on is plot. That's sort of the central structure of most narratives. So it's the easiest to see, and it's usually the most powerful or the most important element of a narrative to see. However, character is right up there with it, and so are the other things. They're all important. But character is one of those things. And by character, I don't mean all of the elements that make us the person that we are. I do mean all the characters, you know, that have to be present for a play to happen or for a drama to unfold or whatever it is. And in this case, I want to take one of those characters. And by that, I mean an archetype, this type of character that's in so many stories, almost every story, not quite every story, but really close. And you'll know what I mean as I get to it. So let me start it out by just giving an example of the kind of characters I'm talking about. And I'm not talking about myself in these stories, but a couple of times this has happened to me that's been so obvious. It really just makes you grateful, you know, when you run into a person like this, a character like this in real life. And so, you know, one case that happened to me probably 10 years ago is that I was on a trip to Nashville from Dallas, a trip I make often because I have 4 grandchildren and 2 kids and a, you know, in-law and all that stuff. But grandkids are the ones that matter, right? So I have 4 grandkids who live in Nashville. I'm just joking. They all matter, obviously. It's a joke. But I'm driving to Nashville overnight. Not overnight, but into the night. It's a long drive. It's a 10-hour drive for me, 9 to 9.5 for my wife. She's a little more aggressive behind the wheel than I am, but it takes me about 10 hours to get there. And so I'm going to get there right around midnight or just after midnight. That's when we were going to arrive. Joan is driving with me, riding with me. So I'm driving my truck. It's an old truck, but it's not super old. I mean, at the time, it wasn't old at all. It was, I don't know, a few years old. So anyway, I'm driving the truck. We get to West Memphis, so we're in Arkansas, East Arkansas, West Memphis, and I stop, you know, to get a little bite to eat or, I don't know, at a convenience store. I can't remember why, but I had to stop. And so I pulled off the road, you know, pulled into a parking lot, stopped, got whatever it is I needed to get, got back in the truck, and it's like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. There was nothing wrong with the truck before I left. But obviously there was. The battery was close to dying. I just didn't know it. It had not given me any clue that something was wrong. And now it's dead. Okay, so I don't even. And I realized I dug through all the stuff that we had packed, and I hadn't packed my jumper cables. I keep a little kit in the truck normally, but somehow or another, it ended up outside of the truck. So I didn't have jumper cables. Look at that. There's a gas station right across the street. So I'll make my way across the 12 lanes of whatever that street was, 6 lanes on one side and whatever. I'm making up the number, but it was a lot and a lot of traffic. And I got across and I went to the convenience store and I got the jumper cables and I start making my way back across the street. And somebody notices I'm carrying jumper cables and asks if I need help. And it's like, yeah, I could use a jump. You know, that would really help. So they follow me over there, and they try to jump it, but they've got a really old, small truck, and there's no way it has enough charge out of the alternator and their battery together to get my truck jumped. I probably could have stayed for an hour connected and made it work, but the guy said, and he was, I think, probably willing to do that. But, you know, what he said was, I mean, I just told him, man, thanks so much for trying. I'll call, you know, a tow company or somebody, and they'll be able to help me get it started, and we'll get out of here. But thanks a lot for helping. And he's like, oh, man, there's a place right down the street. We can go get you another battery if you need to and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, man, that'd be great, but I hate to take more of your time. He's like, it's not a problem. So I get in the truck with the guy. It's a cold night, by the way. I get in the truck with the guy. We go down to the auto parts place, and we get the battery. I realize I don't have any tools to put the battery on, and I didn't look at it, so I bought a little tool kit to put it back on. We come back to the truck, and, you know, as it turns out, putting a battery in my particular truck, it was a GMC Sierra 2015. That was before it was stolen a few weeks ago. If you don't know the story, I had my truck stolen a few weeks ago. It's okay. The Lord provides. It'll be all right. He also provides judgment, which would be welcomed on some people, but I'm going to work on getting to a point of forgiveness for that. But anyway, that's a different story. So that truck, the battery is quite an ordeal to change. And I'm not saying it would be much for a person that does it all the time, but I don't do it all the time. And so it's like, what the heck? And this guy looks at it and goes, oh, yeah, I can do that. Just let me do it. So he takes the tools, and he's under my hood taking off my old battery and all the stuff that you have to get out of the way, a brace and a, I don't know, whatever. And you get it all off, and he replaces the battery, and then says, oh, you know, you're going to have to pay for the core if you don't take it back. So let's take the battery back. So we get back in his truck and take the battery back to the old battery, back to the auto parts store. I mean, all of that. And I'm talking to the guy, and we have a great conversation. I find out about him, and he tells me about himself and his son who lives in Nashville and blah, blah, blah. And he's just, you know, I'm like, oh, man, what can I give you for this? Because, I mean, there's no way I could pay you back enough to do all this. He's like, oh, man, no, if my son had this happen, I'd want somebody to help him out and blah, blah, blah. And so he just, you know, he gets in his truck. The second he drops me off, he's in his truck. He just leaves. You know, he's gone. He just helped. He just wanted to help. That, you know, changes your perspective on who you are in the world. When somebody just shows up out of nowhere and you never see them again and they're not looking for anything, they just help. That kind of person is just different, you know? Same thing happened, and I'll tell this story more quickly. The same thing happened a few years ago. In fact, I think it was right after COVID, if I remember correctly. One of my daughters was going to come and visit me here in Dallas and was driving in with, I think, one of her children and had a flat. You know, it happens to anybody. On I-20. Managed to get off the highway onto this side road and is just stranded there. And, you know, they're miles and miles, hours from home, and they're here. So, you know, she gives me a call and it's just like, hey, I've got a flat. I just wanted to let you know it's going to take me a little longer to get there and didn't really have a plan. I'm like, I got to get in my truck and get there, you know. So I get in the truck, which started a different story, start heading down to South I-20, which, you know, I live in Northeast Dallas, in order to get to her, to change the tire, fix the tire. You know, my poor daughter, she's stranded on the side of the road. What am I going to do? And I get there, and there are these three guys who speak only Spanish who are already putting her flat tire back in the back of her vehicle and have put the spare on and are finishing it up while I'm walking up. And they're like, well, they can't say anything to me. And at the time, I wasn't taking Spanish. I could communicate a few things now. Then I couldn't communicate anything but gracias, you know. And they were just like, hey, you know, we're helping, you know, don't turn us in kind of attitude as they were. And I'm like, oh, man, thanks so much. I didn't even know how to say it enough. I offered them money. They were insulted a little bit, which I understand, and didn't take the money. And they just, I mean, by the time I get there, they're just done. And so they hop in their vehicle and they just leave. And I'm just left flabbergasted that, you know, my daughter by herself on the side of the road with a grandchild was taken care of by these men who just showed up out of nowhere and then disappeared. In real life, that happens all the time. In real life, it happens all the time. And we don't always appreciate it. We don't always notice it. But, you know, I'll point out some of those examples later. But that character, because it's a feature of real life that matters to us. And when it doesn't show up, it's problematic, you know, in our lives. We need help sometimes. So it makes its way into dramas. It makes its way into the way you tell stories. Because it's part of human existence, part of human life, and we can identify with it. And that character type, therefore, becomes a sort of standard character in storytelling. And sometimes authors know what they're doing with it, and sometimes they don't. But the ones who know what they're doing know how to do it well, and you identify these characters in the story. I'm not going in to talk about it in fiction today. I'm going to give some scriptural examples. But even that, I really only want to do so that we can talk about how that character would make sense for us to identify with. And so you can call it whatever you want, a guide. Sometimes I think they're referred to as the guide or the stranger that's a helper. But it's somebody you don't know who just shows up out of nowhere on the side of the road and points their finger and says, you know, you should probably go that way. And they save the day because you would have gone off a cliff if you'd gone the other way. It's that character in the stories that you see. And that's the thing. These characters, the way I'm talking about them, and they bleed over into other characters. There are plenty of other characters who fill this role as well, but they don't meet all of these characteristics. When this character in particular shows up, it's somebody who shows up out of nowhere. You didn't know them before. They know what you don't. They're a local, for instance, so they know all the local cuisine, or they know all the back streets, or they know how to hide you from the police, or they know, you know, whatever it is that's going on. So they know what you don't, and then they help. They just, for some weird reason, decide to help instead of doing anything else. And then they're just gone. They're not a part of the story anymore. They disappear is one way to say it. And obviously that provokes some thoughts in us of the kinds of examples in Scripture that emerge in the same way. And it is that case, that in Scripture, a lot of times, angels are the guide character that we're talking about, the stranger, the helper that shows up out of nowhere and solves the problem. So what I want to do is just sort of set the pattern first so that you can see. And it's a range of ways that these people show up or these characters show up and help. And in real life, it's also that same range, but as I'm doing this, you know, I want us to halfway through sort of turn the perspective in the other direction. So right now we want to take it where we're seeing, you know, all the other characters in the story, the antagonist, the protagonist, the hero type person who's the center of the story that we're reading about. Or the person who's against them, protagonist, antagonist, and all the other characters that show up, a seer, for instance, a prophet, seer type person, or a guardian, a person who obstructs the path. All those other characters can show up, and sometimes those characters can bleed into this one. But when this character is unique, it really stands out in relation to whoever the main character is, the protagonist of the story. So as an example, we just start out with the most obvious kind, the angels, who actually do this as people who show up and disappear in the scriptures, which obviously makes for a case of this kind of character. So the angel in Genesis 21, for instance, does that. This is the story of Hagar and Ishmael having been kicked out of Abraham's house. Abraham's grieving over it, you know, and the Lord says, that's okay, I'm going to bless him. And even though we'd like to retell the story in the way we tell it now, as evangelicals especially, and make it so, well, God must have really hated Hagar to send him out into the desert, send her out into the desert, or he hated Ishmael, or look how terrible these people were. The truth is, God blesses them abundantly and provides for them abundantly, and he has no disdain for them whatsoever, and it's in everything he's doing he's blessing them. Anyway, part of the story is that when Hagar and Ishmael are sent out into the desert with water and everything else from Abraham so that God can take care of them out there, I mean, it's a pretty harsh reality for them to be sent out like that, but that's what happens. And when they run out of water, so as it says it in Genesis 21, the water skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes, and then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot, because she said, I don't want to watch while the child dies. And as she sat opposite him, can you imagine how hard a life this is? As she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept because she has no hope. She has no hope whatsoever. She didn't lift up her voice and even pray. She's out in the middle of the desert. There is no hope for them whatsoever. So she lifts up her voice and weeps. And God hears the voice of the boy. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, This is the guide, the stranger that shows up out of nowhere and just helps. What troubles you, Hagar? Don't fear. God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Get up, lift up the boy, hold him fast with your hand, because I'm going to make him a great nation. And then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. And God was with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness and became an expert hunter with the bow. It's not just that moment in the desert that the guide shows up. The point of that is this guide shows up, and obviously the angel appears, disappears. But the point is, from that point forward, God is going to show this boy the way to prosper in this weird land that consumes most people who go into it. He becomes a master of it because he had a guide who pointed out, hey, where's the water? Oh, it's over there. It doesn't even say God created a well. It says, you know, he opened her eyes so that she could see where the water was and so on. So anyway, the guide shows up and helps, and then they disappear like angels do. There's a sort of nuanced example of this, slightly different, where the guide shows up in somebody, a character, a feature of the story that's always present but isn't always a guide. And, you know, in this case, it's Balaam with his donkey. You know, the story in Numbers 22, when Balaam agrees to go, you know, and make this pronouncement over Israel that makes God angry with him because Balaam's going to err. You know, Balaam's going to do the wrong thing. It's not because he said he was going to do the wrong thing, but, you know, God knows. And so God's anger is kindled because he went. The angel of the Lord takes his way. That's another archetype of a character, a guardian who shows up at the path and stops the way of the person who's going forward. So anyway, this angel shows up and puts up the block. And you know, Balaam can't see that. But he's riding on his donkey. His two servants were with him. The donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road. So the donkey knows what Balaam doesn't know. This is the first indication that he might become a guide. The donkey might become a guide. This is how foolish Balaam is. His donkey is smarter than he is. The donkey has knowledge. He doesn't. That's a theme, a motif that's played on in the New Testament, that Balaam should have been more like the angels and less like the animals. But the animal was more like the angels than Balaam was. The animal is seeing what Balaam's not seeing. Anyway, different point. Back to the story, the donkey sees it, and so the donkey turns aside in the field. Balaam strikes the donkey. You remember the story, and the angel stands in a different block, you know, to keep Balaam from getting through where there's a wall on either side. And the donkey sees it, and you know, mashes Balaam's foot against the wall as he presses against the wall and refuses to go forward. And the angel gets in another place and stops it, and there's nowhere else to go. And when the donkey sees that, just collapses underneath Balaam, and Balaam's so mad he strikes the donkey again, and then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey. The donkey becomes this guide, this person who's able to bring knowledge and awareness to Balaam that he doesn't have in this moment. He becomes that character. And so the Lord opens the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you've struck me these three times?" And Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you made a fool of me," which is quite a confession, you know. A donkey is making a fool out of me. That's the point of big part of the story. "I wish I had a sword in my hand because I would kill you." And the donkey says to Balaam, "Look, I've been your donkey for a long time. You've ridden me all your life. To this day, all my life, I've been serving you. Have I ever treated you this way before?" And he says, "No." That moment is the donkey saying to Balaam, "Then why aren't you listening to me now? I know something you don't know." And of course, it's that moment that God opens Balaam's eyes and he sees the angel, and Balaam realizes what was going on, and in his repentance goes and blesses Israel instead of cursing them and so on. The rest of the story, his path is straightened out by this odd creature, this donkey, who, as far as we know, stops talking after this episode. It's not like he goes through the rest, like Balaam gets a new career as a sideshow in a circus. Come and see the talking donkey. It's just that moment. A guide shows up and helps Balaam and then retreats into the background again. No more to be seen in the stories. So there's that. Okay, And again, I'm giving you different directions for this, and then we'll come back to the main, to the normal way this archetype character shows up, this guide. There's also an anti-guide. There are plenty of deceptive guides who show up, and they say they're helping, but they're really harming. The old prophet in Bethel, in 1 Kings 13, when he finds the man of God, remember, that went up from Judah and cursed Jeroboam, don't offer on this altar. And, Jeroboam stretches out his hand, if you remember the story, and his hand is stiffened immediately. And he's like, oh, maybe you're a good prophet. Would you put my hand back? I'll stop doing this kind of stuff. And so the man of God does that, and he's made his message, and now he's supposed to go back home without stopping anywhere. And other people want him to stop, but he won't. Jeroboam wants him to stop, but he won't. He says, no, I can't eat or drink anything until I get back to Judah. And this old prophet that lived in Bethel finds out about it, asks his sons where he went, finds the path that he went down, and tracks him down on another donkey, tracks him down, not the one that talks, I assume, and stops him and says, hey, come home and eat bread with me. Oh, I can't return with you. I can't eat bread or water till I go back to Judah. That's what Yahweh told me to do. And this guide who had shown up, who you would think is a guide, he's an old prophet from Bethel, but he's an anti-guide, right? He said to him, hey, I'm also a prophet just like you, and an angel spoke to me. I know something you don't. I can help you by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with you into your house so that he can eat bread and drink water. But he lied to him. That lying to him, which, by the way, is a pretty traditional characteristic of one of the much more prominent characters in stories, which is the trickster. But he's not a trickster. You know, he's a guide, but he's the opposite of a good guide. And guides in stories are good. That's their norm. But the anti-guide can be there. So he went back with him, and he ate bread in his house and drank water, and, you know, he ends up dead as a result of it. It's not a good thing. So the point is, there are different... You know, when you don't have a guide and one of these bad guides shows up, it can be devastating. It makes a huge difference, part of the way these stories are told. Other examples, the angels in 1 Kings 19, when Elijah is fleeing Jezebel and goes with his servants to a certain point and then goes beyond that and lies down underneath a tree and, you know, is ready to go off into the wilderness and just die. And the angel shows up and says, you know, you need to arise and eat. An angel touched him and said to him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there's at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank, and then he laid down again. The angel came to him a second time and said, arise and eat. The journey's too great for you. And he arose, and he ate and he drank. And then he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God, to meet with God on God's mountain, because a guide met him halfway there and said, here's something to help you along the way. You're not alone. There's somebody with you. If you bring it into the New Testament, all those are Old Testament examples. If you bring it into the New Testament, you get somebody like Gamaliel. I love this particular one. In Acts 5, when the disciples, the apostles, have been arrested again, they've been put in jail again, they're being accused again in front of the council, and they're plotting to put them to death. I mean, these are the same people who put Jesus to death. So they're just planning on squashing this uprising cult within Judaism that they think is just a nuisance. And so they start to have their council, and let's figure out what to do with them. So when they heard this, they were enraged and wanted to kill them. That is, the apostles are still out there preaching when they shouldn't have been, according to the council. But a Pharisee in the council, not a Christian, not a man we ever know to be a Christian, a Pharisee in the council named Gamaliel, a teacher of law held in honor by all the people. Why is his name thrown into this story for us? Well, partially because he's a significant character in Israel at the time. I mean, he taught Saul, Paul, right? That's who Paul learned from. So, you know, his name is worth throwing out there and saying, look what this guy did. And it's a really weird thing he does. He just shows up out of nowhere in this narrative and rescues them from the fate that was already determined for them, like James's fate, you know, a few chapters later, that they're just going to be put to death. But why aren't they? Because this man, Gamaliel, a Pharisee in the council, stood up and gave orders to put the men outside for a little while and says to the council, I think you should take care of what you're about to do to these men. Suddenly, this person shows up and interrupts what's going on behalf of people he doesn't have any reason to defend that we know of. He just shows up out of nowhere and does that. So sometimes it shows up like that. You know, the guy just shows up out of nowhere and he or she is the person God's going to use to bring about the good result that you wouldn't have gotten to otherwise. Okay, all of that, sort of the standard forms, and in particular the standard form of this guide type archetype of character that I'm talking about that shows up in narratives. And again, the reason it shows up in fictional narratives is because it's a feature in real life. It happens all the time. But what I want to do in order for us to arrive at the point where I want us to be at by the time I get finished today is turn that a little upside down. The way we've been talking about it to this point, the main character in the story, the person we would see as ourselves or we would identify with in the story, the protagonist of the story, has been the person who needed a guide. But there are plenty of stories where if you look at them sideways or upside down, you realize that the main character in the story to us is actually just a guide who showed up and then disappeared from the lives of the other people who were in the story. So Jesus does that all the time. I mean, we're following Jesus in his story. But the fact that in the Gospels, we're following Jesus from village to village, moment to moment, healing to healing, tells you that he's just a blip in the life of the people that he's passing through. And so he does this constantly in Nain, for instance, in Luke chapter 7, the widow who comes out of Nain. You know the story that when they come to the town, when they come to the village, there's this crowd outside of the town, and when Jesus gets close to the village, they see that there is this man who had died who is being carried out, and he's the only son of his mother. This is in verse 12 of Luke 7, if you want to go read it. And the crowd is following, and when Jesus sees her, he just cares about what she's going through. He has compassion on her. And he says to her out of nowhere, she's not looking for somebody to say something to her. He says to her, don't weep. And then touches the bier. And the bearers stand still. They're carrying this bier to the funeral, to the grave, so that they can put it away and wait a year and then keep the bones. The bearer stood still, and he said, young man, I say to you, arise. And the dead man sat up and began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. Here's your son. And fear seizes all these people, and they glorify God, and a great prophet has risen among us, and God has visited his people, and this report was spread about him through the whole of Judea and all the surrounding country, and we know nothing else of the widow or the son, nothing. Which is equivalent to saying the widow and the son, they're done with the story of Jesus. He just popped into their lives and raised the son from the dead and gave him back to his mother and then went on his way. Now, what that does for Jesus in his narrative, we've talked about a bunch of times. It's the thing that every prophet encounters, which is doing these things that prove to people that you should listen to their message, and then he's going to bring the message about the kingdom. That's all fine, and that's what this is implying. It has to do with Jesus' story. But think about what that story means to that widow and that young man. For the rest of their lives, they're going to tell the story. This rabbi showed up. You've heard of him. He was the guy that was killed a few years later, you know? Or maybe he was killed just shortly after this. You know the rabbi, Yeshua, you know, that guy. We ran into him outside the city, and he stopped, and my son had died, and he gave him back to me. What a crazy story. Or the paralytic at the pool of Bethesda in John 5, you know, when he's sitting outside the pool that's, you know, magical, and they... You know, invalids lay there and wait to be put in it so that they can be healed, you know, and there's this one guy's there 38 years. And out of nowhere, Jesus shows up and says, do you want to be healed? And the sick man says, well, yeah, but I don't have anybody to help me. I don't have anybody to help me. And Jesus says, you don't need the pool. Get up, take up your bed and walk. Let me show you the way. And he gets in trouble because he takes up his bed. It's not lawful for you to take up your bed If you could, after 38 years, I'm not waiting till the next day. He told me to get up. I'm getting up and I'm taking my bed on the Sabbath day. And then they say to him, what is this you're doing? Why are you walking with your bed on the Sabbath day? And he says, because the man who helped me said to me, take up your bed and walk. Well, who's the man who said this to you? Now, he didn't know who it was because Jesus had withdrawn. And then later, Jesus comes back into the story with him. So, see, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. And the man went away and told the Jews it was Jesus who healed him. This was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus. It all turns back to getting at Jesus, back to him, in the story about Jesus. For this man, it's this guy that the Pharisees hate who showed up when he needed help and said to him, hey, I have help for you. Why? Why do you have help for me? If you're lying there, don't you say, I've been waiting 38 years. Nobody's offered to help. 38 years. Where is this guy coming from? But he helps. That's a character you never forget in your life. And story after story is exactly the same way. The woman taken in adultery. I mean, here's a woman who's living her life. She's doing something wrong. She gets caught, and as far as she knows, she's about to be stoned. Her life is over. And they bring her. She knows all these characters. She knows all of her antagonists. She knows all the problems that are a part of her life. And they're bringing her before someone she assumes, and why wouldn't she, is going to be a part of the same picture. More condemnation, more rejection, more failure in life. And we all know the story. I mean, he shames the people who bring her and then says to her, where'd the guys go who were condemning you? I don't know. Well, I don't condemn you either then. And that's a man showing up out of nowhere and saying, I'm going to help. Why? Because I can. I can help. I can help. So I don't condemn you. Go and live a better life. You know, don't do what you were doing before. Or Philip with the Ethiopian eunuch. And, you know, this one brings it back to the traditional way I think we would think of how this character could show up in the inverted form, where the person we know is the guide, not the protagonist. And the protagonist in the story in Acts 8 is an Ethiopian eunuch who's traveling through the desert, reading Isaiah 53, and out of nowhere, this guy shows up in the middle of the desert. Remember, the Spirit took him there. In the middle of the desert, this guy shows up and says, do you understand what you're reading? I'm sorry, what? No, I mean, how would I understand what I'm reading unless somebody can help me with it? Well, Philip, you know, is like, hey, I can do that. Want me to help? And so he helps. He helps him understand the passage, and the man comes to faith because Philip was a guide for him and said, let me just help you. Not, look, I can convince you to join my movement, but can I help you? You seem like you need help. How can I help you? And so Philip's help with the Ethiopian eunuch, perfect example in Acts chapter 8. By the way, the same thing that happens, this is the same character that Paul becomes. And Paul is obviously the protagonist by the end of Acts 8. That's who we're keeping track of. But invert the story and think about what it would look like to the men who were on the ship with him, taking him toward Rome. Remember, they go out, and it's like Jonah's story. They go out, and then they're in a storm, and they're all going to perish, and, oh, what are we going to do? And after they've been without food for so long, this angel shows up to Paul, and so the angel is this guide for Paul, because what's going to happen? We're all going to die. They've given up hope. They think the ship is going to sink, and they're all going to die. They're going to lose everyone. They've given up hope. And an angel shows up to Paul and says, let me point you to the way. If you'll all just stay with the ship, it'll be fine. Paul's like, okay, you say so. But he doesn't just keep it. He goes out and becomes the guide to the people who are on the ship, the people who are, you know, controlling the ship, and the guards and stuff who are watching the prisoners who are on the ship. Hey, an angel showed up and told me this. And so he becomes the guide that actually protects their lives and gets them all, every single person, more than 200 people, if I remember correctly, the story in Acts 27, get to shore safely after the ship is broken up in this bay where they're trying to make a run at an island but end up on a reef. They all end up on shore safely because God gave them this guide, Paul, who showed up, who had received a guide, an angel who had shown up to tell him what the story was. So you can see how, you know, the characters in Scripture, the main characters in Scripture, can actually become these guides. So the point for today is pretty straightforward. It's a huge opportunity for us if we back up in thinking about who we are in the narratives that are going on around us all the time, because everybody's got a story. Everybody's in the middle of their story. And by the way, I just want to give a nod to somebody who I heard mention this ages ago that I really respect, who has studied this, Jared Wellman, who has studied narrative structures as well. He's pastor at Tate Springs Baptist in Arlington. He took this approach. I don't know how much he sticks with it now and how close he is to it now, but he's done a lot of work on narratives and how to analyze them, how to use them and stuff. And one of the first things he did at his church that he's at now, Tate Springs in Arlington, was take time to help his congregation see themselves not as the hero of the story, but as a guide, helping people find their way to the hero in the story, you know, that they become the hero of the story, or Jesus is, and they're helping people find the way, find the path to where they're going, instead of thinking of themselves as the center of the story themselves. And there are probably a bunch of other things he did with it too, but in that particular component, I was really compelled by the thoughtfulness that he had put into how this could affect our lives. And that's what I'm conveying today, that same idea, that it's an opportunity for us to rethink who we are in some of these stories that are going on. And it's easy for us to be self-centered. It's easy for us to make ourselves the protagonist. I'm trying to buy food and I get to the counter. They won't even treat me right and everything. And I can't believe people don't just bow and worship when the hero's walking through their story. I mean, that's who I am. We would never say the words, but that's how we think of our life. Get out of my way. I'm trying to drive. Answer the phone. I'm trying to call. Listen to me. I'm trying to speak. I'm the hero of the story. Why aren't you following me? If we were to rethink who we are, you don't have to be an angry hero. I'm just being hyperbolic. The point is, we're not the hero in every story. We're just a part of some stories. And this is a great character for us to be. It's a great opportunity for us to be that kind of character. I mean, think if you just think of the common cases where a guide shows up in your life, they just show up. And how helpful it is when they do, then it should be easy for you to back up and go, I can be a guide in some of these stories. I don't have to be the whole story. Not everything that's going to follow has to be about me. They don't even necessarily have to remember who I am, but at some juncture in the road, I want to show up and point them in the right direction. I want to show them that they're not alone on the path. I want to be the tool God can use to show them that they're not alone on their path. And so, for instance, I mean, just think about a more common case where it would show up in your life. Like, you go to a store and you have no idea where to find anything. And some of these stores, you know, are the size of the state of Rhode Island. And so you show up and it's like, I don't know where to go. I mean, I don't know if to go to the side over there that looks like they might have refrigerated stuff, or the side over here that looks like they probably have trucks they're selling. Where am I supposed to go? And somebody shows up and you say, where do I find the widgets? And they're like, come with me. Come with me. I'll walk you over there. And they walk you all the way to it. And then they don't stand over you and try to pick with you. They just say, hey, is this the right? Oh, yeah, this is what I was looking for. Okay, have a great day. And you never see them again. And they made your life easier. Common example, right? Super easy. But there are people who are more significant to you than that, who really fill exactly that same role. For the many, many, many people who see a therapist or a counselor, that's who that person is to you. They're not the main character in your life. They're not trying to run your life. You're not trying to make them your spouse for the rest of your life. They're not your child. They're a person who has shown up and said to you, I can help you. I can help you. Let me help. Let me offer some guidance. A counselor is exactly that kind of person. I mean, you know, back to a mundane, casual, everyday example. You're walking on the street and you're lost. Hey, you have any idea where the nearest restroom is around here? Oh, yeah, just go down there. You can go in that store over there and they'll take care of you. Not that at 62 that question matters to me, but just random examples. That's all we're working on here. Or even if you don't do that, if you're just driving and you come to an inconvenient merge, which is every single street in Dallas, and somebody just pauses and lets you in. They just, instead of competing, you know, instead of, oh, crisis coming, merge coming, I've got to get in, and they scoot up so that you can't get in. Instead of that, they back up, and they just let you in. That's this person. It's a guide. They didn't have to do it. It was the right thing to do. By the way, that is the right thing to do, and it is the way normal adults should use traffic. But not everybody does. And so when someone does, let's give them credit for being a guide, right? Okay, pause for a second and just go back through that same list. I mean, somebody looks at you and says, hey, where do you find this stuff? Hey, come with me. Let me just walk you over there. Somebody's in real trouble. Hey, let me point you to a counselor. Or, you know, if you're like my producer sitting across the room from me, a counselor, hey, let me help. Let me give you some things to think about here. Or, you know, somebody lost on the street and you get to walk up and help them. Now, you can think of that as nothing more than, oh, well, here's my social obligation. I mean, it's part of the social contract. I live in a society where I've got these obligations not to kill the people around me and sort of pretend like I want to help them. If instead of that, you said to yourself, I can make this person's life a little bit better. Hey, you know, it looks like you're looking for so-and-so. Is that right? So if you go down here and turn left and then take two rights and then another 100 feet, turn left at Joe's, you know, place, then you'd be good to go. I know they won't remember, but at least you got them part of the way down the path to the next place. You know, heaven forbid, you should actually think to yourself when someone rudely rushed up the right lane to merge ahead of you instead of behind you, as they should have, woe be for you to think to yourself, you know, let's just let them in. It's not like it's my job to teach them how to drive. Let's just show them that some people want to help. They don't want to be a nuisance. Maybe they'll follow the example, maybe they won't, but it will be helpful to them and to everybody else in traffic, by the way, so you can just move on down the road. That's a side benefit. So that's what I wanted to do today. I want to give you an invitation and an opportunity, a chance to think of yourself differently. We don't have to be all the characters in every story. We don't have to be an antagonist to every person we disagree with. We don't have to be the hero of every story. We don't always have to be the seer who can show up with the prophetic word and give all the answers to the future of the world to everyone. But one of the characters we can be is the one who notices that there was a need. Hey, look, that guy's stranded on the side of the road. Look at that. He's carrying jumper cables. Look, I mean, this young lady, she's got a baby in the back seat, and her tire is flat. You see the need. And then you show up. You just show up, maybe out of nowhere. Maybe the person is spooked. Where'd you come from? Not important, but I'm willing to help, you know? And then you offer the help. And then you just let them go on their way. I'm not saying every time you just let them go on your way. I know stories like this that have ended with people being friends for life. That's beautiful also. That's fantastic. That's a different story altogether. But in these stories, it's okay if sometimes you are the person who sees the need and shows up and offers the help and provides the help, actually gives the guidance, whatever it was that was required. And then you're just not in their story anymore. But I can't control the results. I can't make sure that they got everything I want them to. How do I know if they're even going to go to heaven when they die? I mean, I haven't had a chance to check on their social welfare for the end of their life. Do they have enough investments in the right investments to be able to provide for themselves in retirement? And our desire to control all of that is the fact that we think we have to be a bigger part of everyone's story than we necessarily have to be. You don't always have to be the center of the story. We don't always have to be the center of the story. Sometimes we can just disappear like that. So, and again, I'm not saying we're always this character. Sometimes you do have your own story. You are the protagonist of a story. And sometimes you are the antagonist, appropriately, in some stories that God wants you to be in. That's all fine. That's fine. But we can be this character. We can be the one who shows up and helps and then disappears because we're not the ones who are writing the story. And because we do have faith in the author of all of those stories. So don't miss the next opportunity you have to be the angel that appears from nowhere for just a moment, but in that moment changes everything else for the better. In a story you probably won't even get to read the end of in this lifetime. What a great, mysterious, beautiful way to be the presence of Jesus in this world.
Thanks for joining us for Coffee with Creamer. Your cup of coffee may be finished, but we are not. Come back next week for a refill as we sit down to examine a new set of ideas and cultural issues. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or visit our website at barrycreamer.com. Until next time, keep your mug hot and your mind sharp.